This is Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Day two of the Republican National Convention, kicking off at Milwaukee's Pfizer Forum with the theme, Make America Safe Again.
Wisconsin's 41 Republican delegates are among the more than 2,000 in attendance from every state, along with them thousands of police, journalists, and volunteers.
We're bringing you the voices of Wisconsinites sharing their experiences at the convention. Producer Mackenzie Crummy was inside the security perimeter yesterday.
She talked to volunteer Robin Moore of Brookfield, who's been a Republican delegate at two conventions. This is her first as a volunteer. Moore said volunteers help in a lot of different ways.
We're helping with the flow. Like this morning, I directed people who were coming in through a checkpoint for security, like I mentioned. And so it was just, you know, I just took charge because it was early and there were not everybody was there yet. So I was like, okay. You know, we had people without bags, people with bags, and people with all the media gear. And so they got it set up and we got people in and flowing. So we just want to make the experience, you know, a little easier for people, being the first time in the city, you know, being the first time at a convention, and just want to have a good time.
Did you have any fear or hesitation after Saturday, after the attempted assassination?
Myself, no. I know enough people in the Wisconsin Republican Party to know all of the, you know, good work that's going on behind the scenes. I know these people, and so I trust them. My family, on the other hand, I've gotten a lot of phone calls.
They're worried for you.
Yeah, just concerned. But, you know, I think that because that happened, you know, I can't imagine somebody trying something at this point, because security is just so good. I mean, there are so many officers from all around the country that are here putting themselves here to help keep the convention goers and, you know, the media and our delegates and our elected officials safe. And I do feel very safe.
Can you give us an idea of what security is like? Like, what does it take to get into the building? You know, a random person off the street cannot just walk in here.
So there is that soft perimeter and then a hard perimeter. And I did help volunteer this morning at the hard perimeter for media. And it was strict. There are dogs sniffing every media case that came through, every backpack that came through. It was Secret Service, it was TSA, it was, you know, then local police officers and us volunteers helping to keep everybody patient, because it takes time. But I think people understand that's what it's going to take, you know, to make sure that they don't miss a thing.
At a nearby hotel, Wisconsin's delegates had breakfast and mingled in the lobby. Delegate Barb Bittner grew up on a dairy farm in Chilton and now is a business owner.
This is her first convention. Bittner said she was in shock when her friend messaged her about the assassination attempt on former President Trump, but she believes Americans have more in common than they think.
You know, I've always had a strong feeling about the divisiveness in our country, especially over the last couple election cycles. It's gotten more and more out of hand. And for me, what I find is I have a lot of Democratic friends. So when I talk to them and I talk to people that are on the other side of the aisle from me, I find that individual people outside of the media and the politicians, we really have the same goals. We want safe communities. We want good education. We want opportunities. And we're not as divided as people think we are. So it's hard for me to watch the division on television and hear it, because I know on the ground that that's not the case. And I think that we need to change the discourse in this country. I would like to see more people be willing to actually discuss their ideals and their thoughts on politics without coming to yelling and shouting or shutting down the conversation. We have to be able to talk to people. And I think if we can do that with each other, we will find we do have a lot of common ground and we're not as far off as the media and the politicians who are trying to win elections would like us to feel.
Keep listening. This week on Wisconsin Today, we'll be bringing you daily interviews and updates from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee.
And with the Republican Party meeting in Milwaukee this week, we turn our attention to a local faith leader who's getting influence in some GOP circles.
Milwaukee area pastor Matthew Turella leads Mercy Seat Christian Church. Turella's anti-abortion activism has reached members of former President Donald Trump's team and some Republican lawmakers who have invited him to speak at events around the country.
Wisconsin Watch and ProPublica are reporting on Turella's views, often seen as extreme, and their rising acceptance in conservative politics.
Phoebe Petrovic is an investigative reporter at Wisconsin Watch. Her latest article is called The Gospel of Matthew Turella, How a Militant Anti-Abortion Activist is Influencing Republican Politics. Phoebe, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, give us a sketch here of who Pastor Matthew Turella is. What is he like?
Yes, so Pastor Matthew Turella is a Milwaukee area pastor based in Washington County who in the 90s and 2000s had a reputation that preceded him as one of the most militant anti-abortion activists in the United States. He was known for blockading clinics, calling churches to form militias, and even defending the murder of abortion providers. Fast forward to today, he is considered a thought leader among the far right that is increasingly gaining acceptance and embrace among mainstream Republicans. And he has done this by touting this doctrine that claims that government officials have a God-given right and duty to defy laws, policies, and court opinions that they believe violate God's law.
This book that you're referencing published about 10 years ago, The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. What is the core concept here that is becoming more influential, that's gaining traction?
So what Turella is doing in this book is taking a 16th century Protestant doctrine that he refers to as the Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. This is something that emerged from the Protestant Reformation in a time of religious wars, when Catholics and Protestants were killing each other, and when the church and the state were much more intertwined. And it's part of something that academics call Protestant resistance theory. That's something that they debated and thought about for over the centuries. When is it okay for someone to resist a tyrant, to kill a tyrant even? Mm-hmm. And Turella takes this and says that he argues that this has been something that the American framers utilized during the American Revolution. Scholars say that that's just not true. And he says that this is something that is appropriate and justified for use in America today, from your school board member and your county commissioner to police officers and to sheriffs, all the way up.
You examined Turella's influence in a Republican stronghold being Waukesha County and the Republican Party of Waukesha County. What did you find?
Yes, yeah, so we found that Waukesha, the Waukesha County Republican Party has a number of pretty strong ties to Turella. So they have invited him to speak twice in official Waukesha GOP events. One of the first of those was actually two local candidates when they were sort of kicking off their new races. And so he came to speak on this doctrine to say, hey, as local candidates, this is your right and duty. You should take this Christian doctrine into your work in our secular government. And the second time he spoke at Waukesha, he talked about secession and said that potentially county commissioners might in the future need to secede because, quote unquote, the country is breaking apart. The Waukesha County Republican Party also sells the book in the office. It's the only book that they promote on their website. They have an entire page dedicated to it. And they also have ties to members of his church, including someone who is currently facing a felony charge for making a bomb scare against LGBTQ folks at an LGBTQ event. And so I've asked the Waukesha County Republican Party about this. And one of their members, a grassroots director, told me, I've never even heard the name of Turella, even though his social media profile showed that he had promoted Turella's event four times. The executive director declined an interview. She claimed that they only had one interaction with Turella, even though she's on tapes talking about the second event, saying that it was so amazing. And she didn't get back to me to clarify that discrepancy.
We're talking with Wisconsin Watch reporter Phoebe Petrovic. Her latest piece detailing the rising political influence of a Wisconsin pastor, Matthew Truella. Phoebe, Truella's ideas have come up among conservative activists challenging election results. Has that been part of his own activism, or is it, other thought leaders applying Truella's concepts and principles in other ways?
Yeah, that's a really important question. So it seems that for the most part, this is other people taking Truella's work and bringing it into other areas of activism. And this is why extremism researchers that I spoke to identified Truella as a thought leader, as someone who's creating the ideological religious justification for some of these far-right causes. So a really prominent activist, booster of election denial conspiracy theories, has taken Truella's book and made it the basis of his 29-state tour. I think it was 55 stops all across the country, where he is urging people to tell their local officials that they should not certify election results because the machines are inherently untrustworthy. I asked Truella about that when I interviewed him, and he seemed, kind of pleased that his ideas were getting out there, but he hasn't taken that activism up himself, other than to say in sermons and to me that he does believe the election was stolen. And of course, there's no evidence to support that.
And these sermons in the Milwaukee area taking place at a local hotel, where do things go from here for Truella? What are you watching for?
I am watching for really what happens with the election, and if there are counties, communities across the country that refuse to certify election results. We have already seen that, and I'll be interested to see if these are places where that activist has come. I'll also be interested to see if there's a skirmish around whether or not to certify the results at the national level or to decertify, like we saw last year, if people are invoking the doctrine of the lesser magistrates, as some state lawmakers did last year in efforts to refute certification or decertification.
Phoebe, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Phoebe Petrovic is an investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch as part of ProPublica's local reporting network, and she was with us to share her reporting on Wisconsin pastor Matthew Truella and his influence on Republican politics.
Coming up on Wisconsin Today, college Republicans around the state reflect on issues in the presidential race and the age of the candidates.
Amongst my generation, age doesn't matter as much, so long as they can do the job.
We check in with three college GOP leaders in the state. That's ahead on WPR News. It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Parrott.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Young voters on college campuses in Wisconsin and across America will help to shape the November presidential election.
Millions of young people have reached voting age for the first time since the 2020 campaign.
With the Republican National Convention underway in Milwaukee, we're hearing from young Republicans about what issues they care about most and getting reaction to the party platform.
We rounded up a round table of college Republicans in Wisconsin last week. Note, this conversation took place before the assassination attempt on former President Trump, as well as before Trump named his vice presidential running mate.
Andrew Emerson chairs the UW Stout College Republicans. Levi Ott is president of the College Republicans at UW Green Bay. And Dylan Liptak is chairman of College Republicans of St. Norbert College. And here's Liptak on his expectations for the RNC and what he's looking forward to.
The thing I look forward to the most is who Trump's going to pick as his VP. He's kind of been foreshadowing certain candidates he has in the woodworks, and he's very much like a showman, and you can tell that he's really trying to ranch the kind of tension on who's gonna pick, just so that when it does occur at the RNC, it's gonna be this big moment. So I'm really looking forward to seeing who he does pick and who his running mate's gonna be.
What name do you want to pass along to Trump for a vice presidential running mate who you think would super energize young Republicans?
I'm thinking Tim Scott would be my preferable candidate, but there are a lot of good ones in like the final lineup.
Why Tim Scott?
I don't know. I liked his performance in the Republican primaries early on, and I think he can bring in a lot of like voters that maybe won't, you know, that he kind of covers a lot of loose ends on the political trail, whereas some of the other candidates in like the current lineup are more ideologically with Trump. And so I don't really see them pulling in any like new voters or like kind of voters on the side.
What about you, Andrew? You hearing U.S. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, what comes up for you as this moment of you know, hearing a running mate is close?
So I'm not opposed to Tim Scott. I like some of the more out there picks, like maybe Youngkin, because that would get some more moderates in. I like Tim Scott. Gets a diversity vote in there, and he's got a much different, and he's got a slightly more different platform than all the other guys that are running with Trump. So I don't like that. I like that. I like Youngkin. I like J.D. Vance. I like a couple. I like a lot of candidates. I don't really have a massive preference as long as they're a solid person, which I think all of the candidates left are.
Levi, your perspective here as we get closer to this moment?
Yeah, I agree with Andrew. I think there are a lot of really solid candidates out there. And really, we just need a candidate that is loyal to President Trump. I think that was the main issue in 2020 is Mike Pence was not very loyal to President Trump. And so as long as somebody, you know, out there who is loyal, I know Ben Carson is a name that Turning Point is in favor of. And I like him a lot. I also like Tim Scott. I think Trump knows who he needs to pick. I think he knows who would be best to bring in the moderates, like Andrew said. And I think it's exciting to hopefully see him make that announcement at RNC.
Levi, what are your top policy issues for Wisconsin College Republicans? What are you talking about with issues?
Yeah. So our top policy issues right now, I'd say, would be election integrity, I think immigration. You know, I do a lot of door knocking for my job, and that's what I'm hearing at the doors is people really care about the immigration and the illegal immigrants that are coming across the southern border right now and actually making a huge impact on Wisconsin, in Whitewater specifically, and even in Eau Claire, I've heard. And the economy is another big issue, policy issue. So as long as we can elect America First candidates like President Trump and other candidates like Eric Hovde, who's running for state senate in Wisconsin, and Tammy Bolin, these America First candidates have America First policies that I think will help all of these issues.
In terms of canvassing, do you feel like you've learned things going door to door, talking with potential voters?
For sure. It's definitely interesting to hear what people care about and, you know, what issues are most important to them. As you know, I think that's what, you know, politics is really should be about, is, you know, people listening to their constituents and reflecting the opinions of the people, because we are a government by and for the people.
Andrew, we've seen the party platform come out now. What is top of mind for you with these issues?
I think just the biggest issue has to be the border, because that's just causing so many problems for literally every single city that we see. I'm obviously a little closer to the Minneapolis than I am to any of the massive Wisconsin cities. And we can see that coming over from the left in Minnesota that's coming over the border. And then, so just the border is probably the most important issue to me. And then just election integrity too, because as long as we can secure our elections, we can trust that our future is secure. And if we can't secure our elections, then, well, there's no point in securing the border, because the country isn't going to go anywhere anyway, because we keep electing people that aren't along with our values. So
I want to learn more about election integrity. What do you think would secure elections?
Well, I think that if we can adopt more of a Florida model, all the votes should be counted in one day. I feel like that's just a no-brainer. Sticking to paper ballots, we don't need these machines. Just get a couple more people out there to volunteer. It doesn't take that long to volunteer. I've done it once or twice before. And so just keeping it more simple, not throw anything on servers. Let's keep it all on paper and in people's hands rather than on a computer's hands.
Dylan, turning to you, the newly published party platform mentions abortion only once compared to over 30 times in 2016. Should the GOP place more emphasis on reproductive rights at this point?
I think the GOP's adoption of the Trump platform on the abortion issue is just a very kind of like smart and like practical stance when it comes to the abortion issue. I think it's a position that most Americans would agree with. And I think it's a kind of takes the issue off the table in terms of like what Democrats can run on. So I think it's a very smart, like practical decision for the RNC that's kind of more focused on winning than anything else. I think that's what really matters.
Pew Research says that about 2/3 of adults between 18 and 24 lean toward the Democratic Party. And I'm wondering, Andrew, how are you communicating with your fellow college students at UW-Stout about the Republican platform?
Well, the Republican platform is, it's going into like a more moderate place as of late. And that's okay, because that also brings in all these younger people. As you can see just by any studies, that a lot of young men are turning more towards the conservative side because they see what's happening with the left. And the more people turn to the conservative side, the more people are open to it and they don't think it's as crazy. And as long as you have leaders that are actually involved, younger leaders at college campuses that we are all doing, that always brings people. Because if people know that there's a group that they can come to and voice their opinions and not be shot down or attacked on them, that always helps out. So as long as you can voice your opinions and talk. So having a place where people can communicate is important.
But it does seem like what Trump says, goes for the Republican Party. Do you think there can be alternative voices in the GOP?
Of course there can, and there always will be. It's just whatever that's what the point of the RNC is, that we can all get behind one voice. And right now that voice is Trump. So Trump is that voice that we're all getting behind, and we're all going to put our full support behind Trump. That's the important part. And after all of our support is behind Trump, we all have that one platform that we all know that we can work on rather than all being divisive anymore.
Dylan, as the next generation for the Republicans, where can the party attract more young people to its ranks? What would coalesce young people around the GOP?
I think a good avenue of doing that would be to kind of focus on issues that appeal to young voters. I feel like a lot of politicians on both sides of the aisle tend to focus more on kind of elderly votes, since baby boomers are such a large voting block. But I think there are a lot of like key issues that are very relevant to just young Republican voters, like such as the economy, housing, and that sort of thing. And I've seen a lot of Republican candidates like Eric Hovde who have made vows to kind of focus on those issues and to like kind of build a better future for young Americans. And I feel like that kind of forward thinking mentality is like the best way for the GOP or really any party to attract young voters.
We're talking about the Republican National Convention and its party platform, the GOP, with college Republican leaders. We have Dylan Liptak at St. Norbert College. Andrew Emerson is with us at UW-Stout and Levi Ott at UW-Green Bay. Levi, let's talk about age. Both former President Trump and President Biden are the two oldest major party nominees in American history. How are Republicans your age squaring with the age gap here between you and party leadership?
I think that's a great question. Amongst my generation, I think it doesn't really matter. Age doesn't matter as much, so long as they can do the job. And I think that was very evident with the debate, the recent presidential debate, we all saw who was mentally fit and who was not. And I think that's been very clear. And that was something that was very telling to a lot of people in the United States, voters, especially, because they saw basically somebody who was 77 and somebody who was 81 or 82, as old as President Biden is. And they saw one candidate do really well and they saw one candidate do really poorly. And I think that's telling. You know, I see a lot of more millennials and more boomers, even some people my age, in favor of younger presidential candidates, and which I am totally in favor of. And I really think this might be the last election where we have two candidates from the boomer generation running for president. I don't think that should disparage former President Trump at all, as you know, he's mentally fit and has proven, you know, with all the rallies that he's doing in 100-degree heat, that he's more than capable of doing the job.
Andrew, I want to turn to you. What comes up for you about the age of Trump and the age of Biden?
I don't think age is that important as long as somebody's cognitively fit. And we saw in the recent debate that Biden is not cognitively fit, and Trump obviously is. He's doing great. He gets out in these 100-degree heats. He does all these rallies. He is busy every single day. He is a great force for this country, and I'm happy to be supporting him.
Earlier this year, Dylan, former President Trump became the first American president to be convicted of felonies. Does Trump's criminal conviction matter to young voters?
I don't think so. I don't think the polls really show that. And I think that's because young voters can kind of see through the like corruption in terms of that prosecution, like how the judge handled it, like where the jury pool was selected, and like all the legal loopholes and stretching of the law that kind of had to be taken to even prosecute him on the charges that he was convicted on. I think most Americans can kind of see it as it is and know that it's just kind of going the democratic lawfare system going after their main political rival to try and hinder them in the 2024 presidential election. But, you know, I think it's really backfired. I think if anything, it has consolidated support for President Trump. And yeah.
I want to turn to the 24-point margin over Trump in 2020. President Biden overwhelmingly winning among Gen Z and millennial voters. And, you know, Dylan, what might change in November that could cause this margin to look a lot different?
Well, for one, I think the addition of third-party candidates like Robert F. Kennedy, who has sort of been polling high himself in young voters, might kind of turn young voters who are kind of angry at both candidates to kind of just submit a protest vote. But I also think that Trump has been doing a lot better this time around at like appealing to issues involving young voters. And I know the Republican Party has been a lot more engaged recently with young voters, you know, through my recent kind of joining of like this whole political scene. I feel like young voters are a lot more important of a demographic for the RNC. And I think they recognize our like value as a voting bloc.
Levi, are you concerned about protest votes and what might happen in November there?
What do you mean by protest votes?
Well, a third-party candidate, perhaps, or not voting for whether it's Trump or Biden.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big problem with a lot of people who lean independent. You know, really, there's only one candidate who has proven, you know, that he has the right economic policies to. You know, he lowered inflation and gas was 87 cents under President Trump. And you're seeing that change. I think it's a unique perspective. People have had 4 years under Trump and they've had 4 years under Biden. And you have to ask yourself, which one were you better off under? And so in that sense, I think voting for an independent, yeah, that's good to have third party options. But voting for an independent is basically you're throwing your vote away, in my opinion, because unfortunately, it's just the way it is in the United States. Third-party candidates have no chance of winning winning for the presidential election. And so really, sometimes I think we have to choose, people have to choose between which candidate they hate the most and vote against that candidate and vote for the other, either Republican or Democrat, but in my opinion, Republican candidate. As a vote for like a libertarian candidate is basically like throwing your vote away. So that's would be my opinion on the issue.
Well, Dylan, Andrew, and Levi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And that was Dylan Liptak, chairman of College Republicans of St. Norbert College, Andrew Emerson, chair of the UW-Stout College Republicans, and Levi Ott, president of the College Republicans at UW-Green Bay. And we talked with these young voters last week.
Wisconsin Today producers are fanning out at the Republican National Convention this week and hearing from our state's delegation, including 23-year-old Dixon Wolf. He's on the Brown County Board of Supervisors and attending his first convention. Wolf says pocketbook issues are a priority among voters his age.
I think that young people are really hurting today with the economy. We see inflation is high with grocery prices and the cost of living, renting, and things like that. I know a lot of young people can't afford homes, and so we're looking for someone that's going to focus on the economy, and we believe that President Trump is going to do that. He had a great economy back in his first term, and so we trust him with that for young people, and so I think that message is going to work for us.
And in coming days, we will hear from more of Wisconsin's 41 Republican delegates and other voices from the RNC. And you can find additional reporting on the latest news at the RNC in Milwaukee. Go to WPR.org/politics.
Coming up, a Wisconsin social media star gets millions of views for videos of cow hoof maintenance.
There's all sorts of different things, from just the uniqueness of the craft, not even knowing that the profession existed, to some, you know, it's therapeutic for some watching it.
Meet Nate the Hoof Guy next on WPR News.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Have you ever wanted to see a cow get a pedicure? If so, you're not alone. If not, you might be surprised.
Cow hoof trimming videos are incredibly popular among certain internet audiences. And one of the most successful creators in the genre lives and works right here in the Dairy State. Take a listen.
So no, we do not stud the tires of the cows in Wisconsin. She has stepped on a screw and it is embedded in the sole of her foot. The real question is how deep has it gone and has it caused any internal problems? And perhaps there's a better tool for this extraction. Let me get this pliers out where I can get some leverage and pop this free.
That's the voice of Nate Ranello, a bovine podiatrist in West Salem. He makes videos under the name Nate the Hoof Guy and has millions of followers, hundreds of millions of views across Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. Nate, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your line of work. What is bovine podiatry?
Bovine podiatry, as hoof trimmers call it, we're just hoof trimmers, but what we do is we maintain the cow's hooves on the dairy farms to prevent problems so that they can lead the most comfortable lives and the most productive lives.
And how did you get into this career?
Well, I always wanted to have my own business, and I grew up in the ag industry. So while I was going to college, one of my jobs on a dairy that I worked on happened to be helping this hoof trimmer, their hoof trimmer, get cows in and stuff like that. So gave me the opportunity to see what this job was like, and wanting to own my own business, it seemed like a perfect fit. So when I graduated college, I trained with him.
Yeah, what does that a training or apprenticeship look like? What kind of things did you have to, what skills did you have to develop to be able to go out and go into business on your own?
Well, a lot of it was, you know, obviously the trade itself, mm-hmm. learning to diagnose the problems, being able to not only fix the problems, but the best way to prevent problems from happening in the first place, which is really what our job is to try to prevent these problems from happening in the first place. But then also different ways to handle cattle to be more efficient, to keep them in the most low stress environment possible. And then, of course, you know, just working with different customers, how to approach different situations and things like that as well.
Yeah, I know watching some of your videos, the cows seem pretty chill going through this, but I know cows, they're 1,000-plus pound animals. What kind of safety goes into it? What kind of caution do you have to take dealing with big animals up close like this?
The biggest thing is to just try to keep them calm. So in order to do that, what you do is try to, even though it's a different, setting than they're used to, having to go through the hoof trimming chute, you try to do things to make it seem like it's their idea. One instance is setting up a lane of gates where they can follow another cow into the staging lane. They can follow the next cow. When a cow leaves the chute, they can follow that cow in. Doing all those things like that and having a good setup keeps the animals calm. And then once they're in the chute, there's a lot of support mechanisms built into my chute to make them feel comfortable as well.
Now, if I'm understanding this correctly, Nate, obviously, if there's some kind of particular problem, a cow might need work on its hoof. But even this is kind of routine maintenance, right? Hooves will kind of grow like our nails do. Talk about that part of the job, please.
Yeah, absolutely. The cow in what we would say is nature, even though cows don't live in nature, but out on grass, those hooves will naturally shed away. There's mechanisms built into how they grow that through the hoof horn dehydrating, it'll actually fall away naturally. But because cows are inside on concrete a lot now, more time than they ever were in the past, the hoof doesn't shed away naturally like it's supposed to. So we have to trim them to keep them in the correct angles, keep the correct toe length and angles. And that way the bones inside the foot work the way they're supposed to. And that prevents a lot of the problems that we deal with.
Now, watching the videos, it can get a little gnarly looking, but you are clear, this doesn't hurt the cow. It's like trimming our nails, right? This is not something with nerves in it?
Exactly. Yep. It's much like our fingernails. And the analogy I like to use is it'd be like the hoof, the hard hoof part that they walk on. That's like a boot that we would wear, right? We would never feel, if we were taking a rock out of our boot or out of the sole of our boot, we would never feel that. It's the same type of situation here. The hoof material, the hooves themselves, are made out of the exact same things as our fingernails, made out of keratin. So yeah, they can't feel any of the trimming on the hoof horn itself. The lesions that we get to inside those claws, those obviously are painful. That's why that cow may show signs of lameness. But if you work carefully around that area, you can really prevent and eliminate a lot of discomfort.
At least from your videos, it looks like you keep plenty busy. Is there a lot of demand for a hoof guy in Wisconsin? I guess it would make sense if there was.
Yeah, absolutely. We're the dairy state, of course. We have tens of thousands, if not, well, probably hundreds of thousands of cows in the state. So, yeah, for me, I have about 20 different farms that I go to. And it's, like we were talking about earlier, it's a maintenance thing. So every couple of weeks on there, keeping up on the trimming, making sure that, you know, cows are dealt with or trimmed to try to prevent these problems. So we'll try to trim them right before they go into their rest period, before they have a calf. And then about halfway through their lactation, that's like the standard time frame that we trim them. And then any cows that may need extra attention, those will get worked on as well whenever we're there for our normal maintenance trims.
We're talking to Nate Ranello, bovine podiatrist, a.k.a. hoof trimmer in West Salem. He makes online videos under the name Nate the Hoof Guy. They are popular. Nate, what inspired you to start making and sharing videos of you at work?
Well, there was several things, but one of the things, I happened to come across a video online one time, and it was a cow getting her hooves trimmed, and it was depicted, or people thought, that it was some type of torture. And it was just a glaring example. This cow was just getting her feet trimmed, but the chute that she was in, it looked uncomfortable. So people jumped to conclusions. So I wanted to be able to to offer my own insight on these different problems, why they happen, what hoof trimming actually is and why we do it, and just to give an all-around like type of knowledge base to it. Little did I know that it wouldn't be necessarily just farmers and stuff watching this, but it would be many more people. It kind of exploded on me, but I was happy about that.
Yeah, we'll get into that explosion in just a moment. But getting into this, did you have any experience doing this kind of media technology before and producing videos?
No, I had no knowledge. I had about maybe a year prior to that, I was still using a flip phone. I had never, I'd never edited a single piece of footage in my life. So it was all my early videos. They're a little rough around the edges, you might say, but I was able to learn over time, figure out what I needed to do, how to trim those videos down to make them, you know, more pleasing to the eye and things like that. So, but my technological savvy was very limited at the beginning.
All right. You start posting things online. When did you realize, wait a minute, there's a lot of people watching these videos?
Yeah, I can remember a day, and it shows kind of the growth that's happened too over time. But I was about 4 months into making videos, and it was in just beginning of summer, and I had a video that all of a sudden got to 3,000 views. And I thought to myself, whoa, you know, even that told me that this is going beyond my, you know, a normal base here. And then of course certain videos that go viral, you can really see what happens. But yeah, it was, you know, it was shocking to say the least. And then I figured out over time why people were watching the videos, and that made it a lot clearer.
Why are people watching the videos? What kind of things do you hear from them as they're commenting and watching these videos?
Right. At first I thought it'd be as an educational, you know, source, but really there's all sorts of different things, from just the uniqueness of the craft, not even knowing that the profession existed, to some, you know, it's therapeutic for some watching it. My voice, they enjoy listening to my voice explain what's happening. A lot of these things just became routine. It was like something that they did every day, was watch these videos to help them calm down, which none of these things I could never foresee happening. And especially my voice, that was one of the things that held me back from creating videos earlier, was my insecurities around my voice. But that seems to be one of the things that they really enjoy.
Well, as a radio guy, I think your voice sounds just great. Now, Nate, you mentioned 3,000 being a milestone. I'm looking at your page now on YouTube, for one example, 1.5 million subscribers, something you just posted a couple few days ago, 173,000 views. I mean, there's a lot of rock bands in town that would be just blown away to get those kind of numbers. What is it like to see 6-7-digit numbers rolling in on your various videos now?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's something that I could have never, you know, imagined happening. But, you know, each time you create a video, you're trying to, you know, improve and do everything that to make those videos better. And I think it shows over time, as you start to learn things, you start to build an audience. And that's really what it comes down to, is building an audience, showing them the things that they want to see. And then over time, it slowly grows. So yeah, your perspectives change when you first get those first few views. It seems very dramatic, and it is, don't get me wrong, but you kind of get used to seeing a lot of views on your videos, and that makes you, you know, like try to reach for higher all the time with them. So it's awesome. I don't take it for granted a single day, because I know it could all end at any minute, but it's exciting.
Talk us through, for people who haven't seen a Nate the Hoof Guy video, talk us through what we're doing, what we're watching.
Yeah, so when I'm trimming on the farms, as I said, we do a lot of maintenance trimmings, but occasionally a cow is going to come in that's got something wrong with her hoof. So what my videos are is I pick that hoof up, I try to diagnose before I start working on it what the problem is and where, and then I go through the trimming process, show the problem itself, and then I talk through all the different steps that I do to relieve the cow of pressure on different points of her hoof, as well as the types of medications that I use, or topical treatments, I should say, that I use to help clear up these issues. And then we do some follow-up videos as well, showing the progression, what these treatments have done for the cow.
You mentioned earlier part of the appeal for viewers is that satisfaction, seeing the starting point to, you know, a job well done, finished at the end. Like, do you get that satisfaction in doing the job, you know, whether or not the video camera is sitting there?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's the most rewarding thing with it, is being able to make that, see how uncomfortable that cow is when she comes in with whatever that problem might be. And then usually immediately following the treatment itself, you can see that improvement. And especially over time, once those things are fully resolved and the hoof horn, the hard outer layer starts to grow back and cover that area back up. Yeah, it's really a rewarding thing, because you know that whether they, even though they may not be able to talk to us, you know that they can appreciate that relief that comes from that.
I imagine for a lot of your listeners, they are not personally familiar with cows. Maybe they've never seen a cow up close. What kind of questions, what are some of the questions you get from people less familiar with dairy cattle?
Yeah, you touched on one of them a little bit earlier. Does it hurt the cow to do that? Because it looks like it would be, but like we said, it's just trimming, you know, it's like trimming our fingernails. Another common one is, why don't I wash the hooves before I work on them? And that's one of those situations that I see that all the time. And it just has to do with, you know, the safety situations surrounding it. The hooves will get slippery. I'm working with sharp knives, power tools, things like that. So that's another common question. And then, you know, what causes these? And I try to cover those. If you watch my videos, you'll notice that I cover a lot of the same things over and over again. But with that in mind, that a lot of the people that are seeing these, this may be their first video. So I want to touch on everything as much as I can, so that they're not guessing what the problem is on their own.
Do you feel pressure in a way now? You're doing your job, but you're having to like play to the camera. Do you feel like you have to top that last video now?
Well, I am competitive and I'm always trying to create a better video, but not really, because my videos are, what you see on my videos is what I'm doing day in and day out, and that I have been doing for like 22 years now. So it's just, to me, it's second nature. I really don't even hardly think about it. There's some extra steps, obviously, with the camera there, but that I just is trying to work around it and getting different shots, being cognizant of that. But for the most part, what you see is what I'm actually doing day to day. So.
And is it a good feeling? I mean, obviously, the job well done is a good feeling. Are you feeling good about, you know, introducing people from all different walks of life to this unique job that you do and this important part of dairy farming?
I am. Yeah. At first, I was apprehensive. I didn't know, you know, would farmers not like, you know, feel like I was showing a bad side of farming. But really, what I'm trying to do is, these problems exist. And if we can show exactly what's happening and why, it's not, you know, from any type of neglect or anything like that. These are just, you know, normal problems that happen on farms. Just like we get sore feet if we're on, you know, on a hard surface, those things happen to cows as well. So, and knowing that, having them, you know, reinforce, they're happy about it. They really appreciate the fact that I'm explaining it and the way that I do it. And they find it as it's helping them, because it's a question that they may not be able to articulate as well or as often as I do. So it helps them, you know, get the message across about what farming is, what the problems that might exist, and why farmers do what they do.
Nate, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for sharing your work with us today.
Thank you.
Nate Ranello is a bovine podiatrist in West Salem. He makes videos under the name Nate the Hoof Guy. We talked to him about what it's like being a hoof trimmer in Wisconsin and his reaction to the incredible viral success of his videos. Summer school programs are wrapping up around the state over the next couple of weeks.
And next week, we'll check in with Whitewater Schools about their efforts to boost the impact of summer literacy programs and how things went this year.
In the meantime, we want to hear from you. If you have kids, did they do summer learning programs of one kind or another? How did it go?
Or do you do informal things during the summer months at home, like reading plans or flashcards?
Tell us about it. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org. You can also call or text 888-642-0232. That number again, 888-642-0232.
Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at WPR.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to WPR News.